All right, thank you. Agenda papers 12A and 12B summarize the committee's May and June meetings, which were, as always, very productive.
Are you ever going to say that they have not been productive?
Not yet. Not yet.
That will add credence to your credibility.
Is it because of the slave driver of the chair?
Agenda paper 12A summarizes the committee's May meeting. It discussed two matters. One of these was discussed by you separately at this meeting, and the other was also discussed by the committee in June, so I will talk about it as part of the June IFRIC update. Agenda paper 12B summarizes the committee's June meeting. The committee discussed seven matters. It published one final agenda decision and three tentative agenda decisions, all providing explanatory material. It also continued its discussion on two proposed narrow scope amendments and provided feedback on the board's project on proceeds before intended use for an item of property, plant, and equipment. So I will first talk briefly about the final agenda decision, which is on page 5. It relates to whether an entity can include particular short-term loans as components of cash and cash equivalents in a statement of cash flows. The agenda decision explains how an entity applies the relevant requirements in IS 7 in this context. The committee also published three tentative agenda decisions. Two of these explain how an entity applies the requirements of IS 23 in capitalizing borrowing costs in particular situations. The IS 21 tentative agenda decision, which starts on page 3, discusses the determination of the exchange rate an entity uses to translate the results and financial position of a foreign operation into its presentation currency in particular extreme circumstances which exist in Venezuela. The tentative agenda decision outlines how, in those circumstances, an entity would assess whether it uses the official exchange rate to translate its results and financial position. Now, the committee also noted that the requirements in IS 21 do not include explicit requirements on the exchange rate an entity uses when the spot rate is not observable. And so, the committee also decided to research possible narrow scope standard setting to address this matter. In addition to these, the committee also continued its discussion relating to the recognition of deferred taxes when a transaction results in the recognition of an asset and liability. The committee has tentatively decided to recommend that the board propose a narrow scope amendment to IS 12, which we will discuss with you at a future meeting. And lastly, the committee also discussed the possible amendment to IS 37 regarding onerous contracts. This is addressed in more detail in Agenda Paper 12C, so I will not say anything more on this matter at this stage. And with that, I will stop and ask if you have any questions on any of the matters included in the IFRIC update for May and June.
No questions?
Nope.
Sorry about that.
I will then hand over to Greg.
Greg?
So move on to agenda paper 12C, which considers the costs considered in assessing whether a contract is onerous. The Interpretations Committee received a request to clarify the meaning of the term unavoidable costs in the IS 37 definition of an onerous contract. And this request was prompted by the withdrawal of IS 11, which contains specific onerous contract requirements for certain types of contracts. That was withdrawn when IFRS 15 became effective on the 1st of January this year. So the committee's decisions on the scope of any possible standard-setting activities is described in paragraph 10 of our paper. And we discussed this with the board back in December last year, and at that time the board had no specific comments, questions, or suggestions for the committee to consider. So since December, the committee has discussed the technical content of any possible standard-setting activities. And a summary of the committee's recommendations is included in paragraph 2 of our paper. So the committee decides to recommend that the board propose to specify that the costs of fulfilling a contract comprise the costs that relate directly to the contract. This is for the reasons outlined in paragraphs 12 to 27 of our paper. We also recommended providing examples of costs that meet this criterion for the reasons in paragraph 29 and 30, and that no new requirements for entities to disclose additional information about owners' contracts for the reasons in paragraph 33. The committee also discussed transition requirements as described in paragraphs 34 to 46 of our paper. We have one question for the board, which is on page 17 of our paper, and this is whether you agree with the committee's recommendations as outlined in paragraph 2 of our paper.
Thank you. I agree with staff's proposal, just one clarification or the wording. Currently, we are using the wording, the cost of debt related directly to the contract. I look at existing standards. Some of the standards actually refer to the cost and whether those costs could be allocated or attributed to the transaction or assets. Normally, the wording is that those costs are directly attributable to that to the transaction or contract. So why we change that word to the cost that related directly to the contract? Secondly, I also saw that IS2, we do use similar wording, but a little slightly different. Currently, IS2 also use one time, I think. The wording that the costs that are directly related to the related directly to the contract. So in my understanding, we try to use the same wording or similar wording with existing standards and try to avoid any confusion to the users, the preparers. So
I think we used the words costs that relate directly to the contract because those are the words that IFRS 15 uses. And I guess we figured that is probably the most recent standard, and therefore was...
The committee did discuss this. Because there's different phrases used throughout IFRS standards, and they're all used to mean roughly the same thing. So there were three options. It was directly attributable, directly related, or related directly, basically. And the committee went for one that is in IFRS 15, partly because it's a recent standard, but also because it's relating to contracts. It was the most similar standard. So it's picked up the wording from IFRS 15.
And also, I presume, because this question came from the application of 15 interacting with 37, even though they're not proposing limiting the scope to that, that's where the question originated, right?
That was another reason. I think everything really pointed towards, if you're going to pick up words from somewhere, IFRS 15 was a good standard to pick them up from.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that this is the amendment to the IS 37, and we try to clarify the unavoidable cost. So first I come out, I directly look at IS 23, when we think whether the borrowing cost should be capitalized or not. Actually, we're using the same concept, whether that cost avoidable or not, to determine whether those costs should be capitalized or not. So this is why I'm trying to thinking it's the same way with regard to those costs, about the cost to give similar or same, explanation of the meaning. Yeah.
Mary?
I am fine with the staff recommendation, with the interpretation committee recommendations. And it's an important difference because we're really here to look for, I think, fatal flaws kind of concerns, rather than redoing the whole process. Just wanted to note that I think if the committee had thought it was more effective, I think it could have decided to do this as an interpretation. I have no problem with their conclusion that it would be more efficient and more understandable to do it as an amendment. But I wanted to comment because I was a bit concerned that people might see what's validly an interpretation shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. I think this could have validly been an interpretation, but if they've concluded, and it makes sense, that it's a lot easier to go in and, you know, change a few words than it is to write a separate document, that's fine.
Thank you. I understand there is a practical issue which we need to address relatively urgently. But I wonder if it is the right timing to make an amendment on the IS-37. I have 2 points. One is now we have just revised the conceptual framework. And there are, as we discussed, slight conflict between conceptual framework and IS-37. Even though our amendment itself is a narrow scope amendment, once we start it could end up, you know, scope creeping issue, and may need to review the IS-37 more fundamentally. That is the one point. And the second point is, although it's a narrow scope amendment, and we can narrow it down to the very specific area, however, it still contains some conceptual challenge. That is, normally we do not recognize liability for operating expenses. So it has some conceptual challenges. So then, if we were to do something, then we have to revisit more fundamentally IS-37. So that's why I don't think it's the right time to do the narrow scope amendment. And my question isn't there any possibility to amend IFRS 15 rather than IS-37? Because we have some articulation in the IS-11, it was dropped off in the IFRS 15. So if that is the problem, then why don't we consider amending IFRS 15 rather than IS-37?
Was it not the explicit decision of the board that rather than having that guidance in 15 that we would rely on 37? So I think this is a natural consequence of past decisions the board made.
Yes.
That's exactly right. I mean, the board consciously decided that the onerous test for all contracts with customers, you line up both former contracts that were in IS 18 and those contracts that were in IS 11, and we'd apply the onerous test that we already had in IS 37. So that decision was made with IFRS 15, and this is about, therefore, and the Interpretations Committee considered this point specifically as well and decided that it was about trying to pinpoint and make a clarification to the onerous test in IS 37, so it would apply to all onerous contracts.
And just if it's helpful, Tag, maybe to explain, because I think that you're right, look, the origins of this was specifically in the context of contracts that formerly might have, you know, to which IS 11 applied, mm-hmm. now flowing through IS 37. But for example, I think it wouldn't be the case that you could have just, say, taken the words in IS 11 and put them in IFRS 15, because also contracts that were formally in IS 18 actually already, Henry, am I right? If it was a contract a revenue contract that was formally within the scope of IS 18, you already went to IS 37 to apply the onerous contract requirements. So I think and that probably was a big part of the board's decision making. So even if we thought it was appropriate to narrow this down only to revenue contracts, I think it's, for example, it's not something as simple as just saying, let's lift what was in IS 11 and put it in IFRS 15, because there were two different pieces of sort of onerous contract sort of requirements in a sense previously sitting in IS 11 and sitting in IS 37 in the context of the revenue contracts that were in the scope of IS 18.
I do understand the structure, because when we discussed IFRS 15, we said we look up at the IS 37. So that's why you are trying to address IS 37. But because it's so narrow scope, for revenue issues, and then try to change it and to make a surgical change in the IS 37 contains lots of unintended consequences for the concept of IS 37. That is my concern. So if it's really a simply revenue issue, I think it might fit better with IFRS 15. We could simply say we normally follow the IS 37. However, in this specific particular issue, you should do this in this way and inherit the, what the IS 11 was talking about. Such kind of issue would not cause unintended consequences, considering the viewpoint of unintended consequences. That is my suggestion. It's up to you.
Gary, thank you.
And Craig, I agree with the staff's recommendations for Aeroscope Amendment, and actually that makes, appreciate there's not huge differences between interpretation and Aeroscope Amendment. This sort of feels more like that than interpretation to me. And so I agree with basically it's approach B is what you're recommending. So, and I do agree with somehow the shared direct related costs or something, but I used to slave over this subject of former life all the time, and the question is, what is? And here you say cell overhead and general costs are not part of it. It would not be accrued. You don't allocate those. Paragraph 20 implies product warranty costs would be accrued. That's with and in your appendix at IAS-2, which says you would capitalize in, you know, basically indirect production costs. But so I know what I mean by directly related other costs, but what do you mean by it? You know, are we going to define it? Because I don't think, you know, there's always the one, what do you do about fixed costs and like fixed non-cash costs like depreciation? I mean, I know you said you're going to have examples of what is and what is not. So I guess I'm asking you, well, I still support it. I'm asking you today, what are you thinking, what is and what is not sort of eligible?
Is it your paragraph 30?
Yes, yeah, that's the examples are in paragraph 30.
Yeah.
But we were thinking along those lines of trying to make sure that there are four activities that have to be incurred to complete the contract, essentially.
I think there's going to be the same judgment around directly related in IAS 37 as there is around the same words in every other standard that has them or something similar. But it's narrowing, it's saying that that's what you're aiming for and not just incremental costs is actually going to eliminate quite a lot of existing diversity of practice, even by going that far.
Well, I mean, I'm okay if we go for judgment and so on. The question is, how many degrees of separation from the contract to general overhead or general administrative costs, you know, we're going to kind of stretch in or shrink out as the case may be. And I see paragraph 30 here. I can take it offline with you, but it's always a challenge about what counts and what doesn't count. Sometimes it varies depending on the type of contract you're talking about. The other thing I would think, I assume we would only be reserving for cost. There's no, you know, margin being reserved for or something, which is always another challenge. So we do nothing for free, but it is an onerous contract, and therefore implied margin doesn't seem onerous. In fact, it's something you want.
Francoise?
The first point, I agree with the decisions made by the committee, and so I support them. My comment second is really related to the same issue that I just discussed by various members here, which is the, in fact, reflect the concern that we have detailed throughout IFRSs that deal with more or less the same issues and that use different terms. And I would appreciate personally if we were making some effort to first move to eliminate on an editorial change basis, you know, the words that really are the same, you know, related directly or directly attributable. For example, I wouldn't see any difference. You confirm there is none. So let's choose whether we choose the old generation or the new generation. I don't care, but unify where we can unify. And I've looked into whether we could have a single list that different standards would refer to. I think it's very difficult.
because there are still specificities in the way, in fact, the detail list interact with the accounting requirements. So unfortunately, I don't have this as a proposal, but at least when we make those editorial changes and affect various standards doing that, if we could have not an expanded analysis, but some wording indicating that applicable in different standards, in different responding to different accounting requirements, we nevertheless have in mind exactly the same ingredients.
I think it's something we just need to keep an eye on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
At least we're not introducing any new terms.
Yeah. I've staked my life on that, but yeah. As a general proposition.
So you have written that.
Do we agree with the staff's recommendations?
Committee's recommendations.
The committee's. Sorry. Sorry, Jen.
Okay.
We do.
All right.
LB.
Yes.
Great.
So, thank you. Agenda paper 12D is about commodities and cryptocurrencies. And in January 2018, the board discussed commodity loans and related transactions. And at that meeting, we provided the board with a summary of discussions of the Interpretations Committee. And we also summarised a number of related areas identified as being of potential relevance to the board in considering where to do any work in this area. And at that meeting, the board asked us to research A, whether the transactions that might be within the scope of any standard setting project are widespread and could have a material effect on entities, and B, possible narrow scope standard setting activities that the board might undertake. Since the January meeting, we have spoken to ASAF and EEG, and we've spoken informally to regulators, accounting firms, credit rating agency, and some other trade bodies. We've also performed a search for cryptocurrencies and IFRS financial statements of publicly listed companies. Feedback on the prevalence of commodities and other transactions is included in paragraphs 22 to 27 and Appendix B of our paper. And feedback on cryptocurrencies is included in paragraphs 28 to 49. So one thing I wanted to point out is that subsequent to posting this paper, the Korean Accounting Standards Board contacted us and asked us to clarify that in paragraph 37 of our paper, and the activities that we refer to were a private response to a question submitted to CASB. This concerned Korean GAAP, not IFRS. At the ASAF and EEG meetings, we also presented some initial staff ideas of possible standard setting projects to address the transactions we discussed with the board in January. Feedback received on those is included in paragraphs 50 to 55 of our paper. We first discuss recommendations for next steps related to these possible standard setting activities, and this is discussed in paragraphs 57 to 67 of our paper. We recommend that the board consider further the feasibility of narrow scope standard setting projects to address commodity loans at a future meeting, but not to consider further developing an investment standard at this time. And the first question for the board is on page 14. So I'll ask whether the board agrees with the staff recommendation.
Would we only consider doing that after we have wrapped up a lot of the other smaller standard setting activities that is on our agenda at this moment?
You're saying the next agenda consult?
For the investment standard, we could ask stakeholders whether they feel an investment standard is a priority.
So I think to clarify,
for
there's...
For commodity loans.
Yeah, so there's like two different pieces to a recommendation. What we've used is slightly, you know, bigger piece, which would be to consider developing an investment standard. We're recommending not to do anything further in that at this time, but to ask a specific question in the next agenda consultation. I think what we're recommending about the narrow scope piece, the commodity loan piece, is not at all that at this stage we're saying do a narrow scope project, but just I think what Craig's saying is he thinks it's worthwhile doing just a piece more research work to see whether it might be possible to do something very narrow around that. I mean, I think it's not yet clear to us whether it will be possible to, you know, to scope that and do something quite quickly and narrowly on that, but we're just suggesting we would do a piece more work to find that out and then bring that back to you.
Martin.
And I agree with the staff recommendation with the exception of this commodity loans, because man, I think if we don't have a standard dealing with investment in commodities, I find it difficult to have narrow scope amendments for a loan in commodities, and don't see why we should do that now, and do maybe we can do, but I don't see that. I think if we're doing that, we should have a broader picture in that and not doing all this kind of narrow scope. Man, I personally don't like all this narrow scope stuff, and because it's risk to forget something and doing something quickly without having the broader picture is, for me, always a little bit too high. So I agree, but I don't see why we should do that work on.
He agrees, except for half. Doug.
Thank you. I agree with staff's recommendation. We need to do something. But to me, this transaction itself is not two difficult issues. We used to have this type of transaction. And the legal title transfers. And for some commodity traders, they are treating it as it's a sales and purchase transaction. So if we could, you know, make a small amendment to IS-2 for the commodity traders, I think we can cover this kind of transaction. So I think we could do something. So I support to start the research.
Nick?
First of all, so thank you for the analysis. This is an issue that's been raised at CMAC, and it's very helpful to size the issue, particularly around cryptocurrencies, just how widespread this is or isn't, and actually kind of tells me that perhaps it isn't as widespread as people feared. So I think it's very helpful, and we can feed that back to CMAC. I am supportive of the staff recommendation. My only question is, and some of you won't be surprised by this question, is when the next agenda consultation is, because I hear a variety of dates, and it would be useful to have a sense of when we think that is. In accepting this?
No, there should be a set date for that.
Well, the requirement's 5 years. And the last one ended in 2016, so 2021.
Okay, so I think we went out for a request for information in 2015, so it would be 5 years after that that we'd kick off.
I think there's some ambiguity about when the 5 years starts, whether it's...
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years.
it would be good. I mean, I can see this is a question we're going to start to get from users, certainly, and they obviously have various issues on the agenda, and to say, you know, what are these issues for the next agenda consultation, and they say when.
Dan Chow.
Thank you, Hans. I also support the staff recommendation, as Tak said. This is not a difficult issue. So once we take the narrow scope amendment approach, it will work quickly and to meet the demand of stakeholders. Just one or two clarification. Why is it we mentioned a narrow scope standard setting project? Is amendment to IFRS 9 or TAC just said IFRS 2 or whether understand? Whether we have in mind...
That's a question.
Try to make the question clear what kind of narrow amendment to which standards. Secondly, whether we are specifically address the commodity loans or we are going to address other similar transactions, as we said, paragraph 65 and paragraph 66. Actually, we did not say that commodity loans. We said financial transaction. That 66 said that involving liquid commodities being used as an alternative to cash and other financial assets. And paragraph 65, those financing transactions are slightly different. So I'm not that confused. It seems that there's three, you know, three transactions, different transactions.
And we should
make it clear what kind of transaction we are going to address: commodity loans, or paragraph 65, or paragraph 66. Yeah.
I think that's why we want to undertake more work on this to figure out what we need to do. And I think, as we say in paragraph 66, we'll only carry out something if we can define a meaningful scope of transactions. So I think if we did consider this further, it would be involve providing the board with more details as to what exactly it would entail. But we're not at a position to provide a recommendation on that yet.
But just to feed off maybe kind of, I think, the point you made, Tack, and I think it's a very good question you raised, Jin Chow, and you'll notice that we mentioned the paper IFRS 9 or something else, IS 2 is a thought, but those comments say it's not strictly, and maybe I'm giving my personal views now here very much, it's not crystal clear at the minute, and that's why we say there's more feasibility work to be done, because for example, I think, Tack, what you were describing is maybe, and tell me if I'm wrong, I put it in the situation where there might be some of these commodity loan transactions, financing transactions, whatever, and we should only use one phrase, by the way, so that's just an error on our part to mention different phrases. But you might be describing a situation, and for me, in my simple mind, I think maybe I'm a jeweller and I might enter into a gold loan transaction for me that's just a one-sided, you know, maybe sale and repo or loan, where I'm doing that because I want to obtain the gold to use in my business. That may not actually need standard setting today. That may already be within the scope of IS2. It depends. And I think that probably is maybe why in your mind you're picturing surely IS2 works because that's just part of me and my business using commodities in my business. The particular transaction that came to the committee was one we were being asked about it from the position of a bank. I think there was very much using the gold as an alternative to cash or another highly liquid security. And they weren't intending, of course, to use the gold. They were entering into like back-to-back transactions on both sides. So it's why at least we're saying before we just suddenly say we're doing something in this, there is more work to do to understand, you know, exactly whether we think it could be done narrowly. Now, if it could be done, I mean, the work to me is very much in trying to work out that, we use the word meaningful population of transactions that we think would appropriately just slot into a standard we already have. If we can do that, then in theory the standard setting might be straightforward, because as you might say, it's just about writing one paragraph, you know, that sets out that scope and puts it into the standard. So it doesn't involve lots of words of standard setting, but I think there's at least some work to be done on working out what that meaningful population of transactions would be in terms of where it would go.
Sue? I'm supportive of the staff's recommendations, including doing some more feasibility. And I guess just to support what Katrina was just saying, I don't think it will necessarily be that straightforward, mm-hmm. because I think we could have lots of different forms of transactions that have got very similar outcomes, so scoping it could be quite tricky. And also I think we may feel very differently about the appropriate accounting depending on the purpose of the transaction, because I think we had at least three different purposes that came up when the committee talked about it, and the gut reactions to the accounting were completely different in the three scenarios. And so I think that's why we'd need to do some more work to work out whether it actually is something that could be dealt with in an efficient, narrow scope way at all. Even though I think it would be nice to deal with it, because I think we definitely do have diversity from what we could tell.
Tom?
Yeah, so can I just get a clarification? Are we splitting these questions one and two, or are we doing both?
Question one.
Okay, so I guess I'm sort of sympathetic to one, contingent on what we say for two. and I'll just kind of, most of my comments are on two. I would have preferred almost if we'd done it in reverse order. But if I just put a marker down, depending, with all, I'm in favor, subject to any surprises I hear about two.
Okay, who supports the staff recommendation in 1A?
You don't.
Martin? Yeah. I'm not. Right.
Every
13 and a half,
because Martin was like, that's one.
Okay. So in paragraphs 68 to 84 of our paper, and we discuss cryptocurrencies. And there we discuss three matters that relate to cryptocurrencies. So holding cryptocurrencies, initial coin offerings or ICOs, and mining. And we recommend that the board refer to the committee the consideration of how an entity might walk through existing IFRS requirements for the holdings of cryptocurrencies and for ICOs. And this could provide stakeholders with some guidance in a relatively short time frame. So the second question for the board is on page 17 of our paper. So does the board agree with the staff recommendation in this case?
I'm supportive of the recommendation, and I appreciate the extra information that came back to us through this paper, because we do hear a lot about this topic, but we really weren't sure how extensive and how much it affected IFRS financial statements. So the research that you've done, I think, is useful. And I don't think that you found anything that indicates we should do more than what is proposed, which is trying to clarify how the existing material would guide people at this stage. So I'm supportive.
Well, I'm supportive of the efforts that are underlying, in fact, your recommendation that is dealing with the issue, relying on the interpretation committee to help in whatever is needed, and doing that in a timely basis. But I'm not ready to support the recommendation that, you know, basically the IFRIC would deal with the issue on the basis of an agenda decision. And the reason for that is that to do so, I would need to be convinced that there is only one path that is compliant with IFRS that would justify that it is an agenda decision that is chosen. And the second reason is that even if there is only one path available within IFRS, I would not be convinced that this path necessarily ends up with the most relevant accounting. So what I would really suggest instead is that the analysis that would support a possible agenda decision first comes to the board, and if we are supportive of that analysis, then that we indeed let the IFRIC move on that basis. But it's very difficult to conclude on the basis of this paper whether no standard setting activity is necessary, and basically you don't tell us what would be the basis for this agenda decision. I would like to note in addition that I have a real concern with the scope of our IS-38. That tends to be a catch-all of whatever doesn't fit in the scope of any other standard, and is accompanied by accounting requirements that I think are appropriate or are likely to lead to relevant accounting only for a subset of the things that, in fact, meet the scope. So maybe having a look at how a narrow scope amendment could also close the door to this kind of scope creep by a too broad a definition could be helpful in a number of cases.
Let me open with a quick question, and I'll make my comments. In the document, it makes it sound to me that the decision to go with use IAS 8 and walk through was reflected concerns over the availability of resources to actually pursue a project. And so I have a question: is if you had, were told that you had the resources, what would your recommendation have been?
Maybe I'll come in, and sorry, Craig, if I'll add to that. So there's just two things I'll pick up, Tom, in passing. First of all, I think you said maybe in your commentary about our recommendation is kind of to use IAS 8 and talk about that. Just to make clear, what we're recommending is the committee would walk through existing requirements. That doesn't necessarily mean people would be an IS-8, but it would be walking through the literature. I think in responding to if we had unlimited resources, I think in any consideration about priorities, I think as you talked about as part of the agenda consultation, we very much weren't just thinking about whether we had more staff, because if it's a priority, we can prioritise staff appropriately in the sense. But I think importantly, it's about, and again, not only your time, but it's about stakeholders' time. So it was more that, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's more in thinking about, you know, the capacity of everybody in the system in terms of what are all the projects that the board are currently working on, which is why our starting point was to think if we were to add any sort of standard-setting project on this, the natural thought would be, is something else going to move down the priority list that the board's already working on? And say, with a focus more thinking about external stakeholders as much as internal resources. I don't know if that answers your question.
It doesn't.
Okay.
My question was, had you the resources, would you have made a different recommendation?
And I suppose my answer was, I don't think we would, because it's not just about our internal resources. It's
Broadly resources then.
I don't think so, because I think implicit in the staff's recommendation is, given the size of the problem that we think we have at the moment, this is probably a proportionate response.
Okay, so anyway, I was just curious a bit about the lean, because I actually have quite a bit of concern about this path. And it goes to, first of all, I think we have there's a lot of agreement out there about what the solution is that I can see. Most people seem to agree that the solution, first, certainly for cryptocurrency and probably for commodities that are held for investment purposes, that the solution is fair value through profit or loss.
I know plenty of people who strongly disagree.
Okay,
with that.
That's fine. But the ones I've looked at, that seems to be really strong. So Japan have a basically a mini standard. The Australians put out the very thoughtful thing in 2016 that was very clear that that's where they were. The Canadian IDG group, when they discussed it, again, this is you have to go and listen to the discussion, but I think there was a significant move toward that way. Apparently the Koreans also came in with this. Is that correct?
So I clarified that. It was a private response to one of their questions.
The documents I can find didn't show significant sense going the other way. They find kind of a fairly significant consensus. I think, to me, when I look at it, it's the thing that makes sense, is that would be the solution. And then when I think about kind of how this walkthrough will work, and again, I've listened to, again, the Australian document does a nice summary. The Canadian IDG does a very similar kind of discussion. And what people do is they go through, some will say, well, is there a standard that you would go to? Does it fit under a standard? And the one that shows up is IAS 38. Some people will go directly there and say that the exact definition, which I'd written down so I'd have it, non-monetary asset without physical substance, that's what a cryptocurrency is, apply IAS 38. Trouble with IAS 38 is you get a very bad solution. Okay, you fail the relevance and representational faithfulness. And some people might not get there for any number of reasons, in which case IS 38 may still show up when you go to the relevant other standards. And again, you get IS 38 giving you a bad solution. IAS 2 giving you a bad solution, unless it's commodity broker traders that they somehow manage to slot themselves in. IFRS 9 gives you a nice solution, but you can't get there because it's not a financial asset. IAS 40 gives you a nice solution, sort of, or optionally, but it's not the right asset. So when I think about what we're doing, to me, and putting suicide, we can go and do a further survey, but the evidence I've seen suggests that there is a fairly clear solution. And what we're going to do is produce something that's going to lead us to a not-so-good solution, because I think when you do those applications, the most likely place to land is a very bad solution. I'm also concerned about the timing. If we're talking about an agenda consultation for this stuff, and then the 3 years or so, 8 years from now, we'll have a solution. These things are growing exponentially. Very hard to predict where they'll go. It might be some countries are banning them. On the other hand, other countries might use them. It would be really nice if one took hold in exchange trading. You would never have to pay an exchange difference, you know, that might take hold. And so I'm thinking about one of the Canadian comments is whether we should be perhaps proactive. And it's small now, but 8 years from now, very hard to predict, and sitting and waiting till it's a huge problem maybe isn't the best. And also my observation, having sat here for a year, once people do their own accounting and become happy with it, it is very hard to get them to move. They lobby like crazy. And there are lots of examples causing us a lot of grief. So 8 years from now, I'm not sure I want to turn over. And they'll like the IAS 38 accounting if that's what they do, because they get to park everything outside profit and loss, which is that's showing up in at least four running issues today. So I just have concerns that this may lead us to a place, and I'm not sure, again, how expensive it's going to be, somewhat costly to go through this exercise in guiding people. And is it going to become a big problem? Or even an IFRS for SMEs, I don't know how many little companies are doing this, but their hierarchy would probably suck them back. If we put something in, we would probably be covering them off through their hierarchy. So I'm really sympathetic to the logic of this and the current small size. But when I look down the road, I'm quite concerned that this may be an issue that we may regret 5 years from now. And it's a tiny issue in that you can roll two significant things together. It's the commodities and the cryptocurrencies. There is kind of, as the Australian said, a really significant gap that could be filled. And so anyway, I just have a genuine concern about waiting 8 years, and I think we should think really carefully about whether this shouldn't...
On the other hand, there is also a very real possibility that in 5 years' time, they are no longer around.
I totally, as I said, they could be banned everywhere.
There are enormous concerns about consumer protection issues, and I also feel that if we should engage in standard-setting activities, that it would serve to legitimize the sector. And it's still not a big issue. We have a lot of other stuff to do. So I would be very hesitant to engage in real standard-setting activities in this field.
Can I say something just responding to you, Tom? Because when you talked about ISA, whether our decision not, or the staff's recommendation, not decision not to go down that route, was that because of resource constraints? Was it ISA you're referring to, or a new standard?
A new standard.
A new standard.
And just to understand your point, Tom, I think, because when we talked about it at the board in January, I think for all of the comments made, you directed us to say is that, I think I heard somebody, I don't know whether it was Daryl say something, I don't picture that we're going to go about developing IFRS 18 Bitcoin, in the sense that because it's moving so much, you know, if we thought it made sense to address something, addressing sort of a wider investment standards for the point that I think you said and we said in the paper, we think there is, you know, a gap in our literature there. But I just wanted to clarify, is that what you would be suggesting?
It seems to roll in the crypto and the commodities nicely so that you're getting more bang for the buck.
It's, by the way, remarkable that the Canadians, they just can't stop mining. They love these underground activities.
I think the other point as well is, like, there's, I mean, there's three issues on the cryptos, as Craig articulated. There's the holding, there's the ICOs, and there's the mining, and it's three very different issues, and we're providing three separate recommendations for each of them. And the holding arguably is probably what our data indicates and our stakeholder outreach indicates it's the most prevalent right now. And the staff have recommended something that could be done in the short term. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation out there, a lot of existing commentary that indicates IS 38 and or IS 2, depending on the particular circumstances, might be the way to go. There's obviously Japanese standard setters, fair value 3P P&L, but both approaches, whether you're looking at IS 38 or fair value 3P P&L, are going to require an entity to figure out whether or not there's an active market. And if you think about there being 1,300 types of cryptocurrencies out there, that's going to be another dilemma that people will need to deal with as well. But I guess the question, I don't know, is going to be ultimately what time frame do we want to do something in? The board seems to be asked about it at every forum you attend. Is it something helpful we can do in a short term, or does the board want more resources to be allocated to this? But bearing in mind, you know, in 8 years, to your point, I don't know, we might not have any Bitcoins.
Well, no, that's right. Hans is right. It could be zero.
Yeah.
It could be enormous. Right? And that, I just want to say, I'm not saying which it'll be. I'm just saying there's a possibility that it could be a really big thing with a whole pile of people entrenched in an IS-38 model that doesn't work.
Constanza?
Yeah. I think there are other things eventually that the committee could do that would be some standard setting, but that could still be a fast response. When we discussed it back in January, I mean, there was this idea that it could be an interpretation. Noting that this doesn't fall naturally under the scope and that, you know, the analogy is used. I have not developed any strong analysis, but so to me, I would be really supportive of having the IFRIC do something in this area. I also agree with the timely response, but I don't think the agenda decision path is a reasonable path for us to decide today without knowing where that leads. And because I suspect that IS-38 would play a role, that's also. So I think alternative routes for the IFRIC are probably possible.
Daryl?
So a couple of points. I guess when I first read this, I had hoped that we could have applied Joan's conceptual framework discussion from an hour ago to this. Mm-hmm. But I think the more that I've gone back through the scope, I've concluded where I think people, Tom and Francoise, are coming to a large extent, which is that the scoping in IS-38 seems, and IS-2 seems to be making it hard to get away from that being the natural conclusion. And I'm not sure that an IFRIC interpretation is going to move away from the words if that's what the words are essentially saying. So be it an agenda decision an interpretation, I think you still end up with saying, well, the scope is the scope is the scope. So I think that kind of leads me into the question then, and I probably share the views that have been expressed before, that I don't think 38 provides what feels like an entirely relevant outcome for this. So it doesn't provide an answer that feels like the most helpful answer in terms of an accounting practice. Tom's question about resources was interesting, and I guess I would have answered it slightly different to the way others did. If we had unlimited resources, I guess we would fix everything. And so I think it's hard. You always have to consider the weighting of resources in the process. I then get myself back to the discussion that I think a couple of you have referred to earlier, which is, I think because of the fact that we don't know where cryptocurrencies are going to end, the idea of a bespoke cryptocurrency solution isn't going to make sense because we just don't know what form this type of product is going to take in the future. So anything we do in this space has to be this broader investment type space. So for me, there are a couple of things. I think we have to push this through IFRIC as soon as possible. I think right now there appears at the least to be diversity in practice which is not based on the words in our standards. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to be fixing that problem as soon as we can. And then I would be keeping this investment idea if nothing else in our longer term, in the longer term horizon. I think we really need to be looking at it. I think there are a lot of products that fall in here. The one thing that we didn't, I don't think, get through the assessment we did of financial statements, so we picked up the prevalence of bitcoins and other products on the financial statements of companies. Did we, and I may have read this and forgotten, but did we pick up the relative value of those items on the balance sheets of these companies, because I think it's both of these that are important. It's not just lots and lots of companies will have some sort of investment in artwork or gold or other things on their financial statements, but typically, unless this is their business, it's not overwhelming the other assets on the balance sheet. And so I still don't see this as being we need to move very quickly on this. I think it would be good to file to get absolute statement of what the words say and what you're required to do, so we know that IFRS has been correctly applied. And then we work on the relevance as a longer part of a project that is dealing with all of these product classes, and therefore it doesn't matter what the final products actually are, what form they take.
And just to respond on a relative value question, we did, through one of the regulators, get some idea of what that was. In some cases, you know, it was very low, maybe 3% of the total value of the entity. In one case, I remember an outlier, it was 85%. So, I mean, we've got a pretty small sample, and they're based primarily in Canada. And we know that some of the regulators, they've got a list of entities who are active now, who are on a watch list because they think that they're going to do something. Part of the issue is, it's our understanding that right now some of the audit firms are still having trouble determining the right approach to audit these items, whatever they may be. But once they get over that hurdle, there's a thought that these may grow significantly.
One other thing then that might just be useful is it might be useful for an IFRIC agenda decision or whatever comes out of the IFRIC process to just remind people about the requirement to disclose useful information. And it seems to me if this is 85% of your balance sheet, then even if you're not required to present the fair value, disclosing the fair value may be useful information.
And that was probably from our perspective and thinking about the recommendation, highlighting relevant disclosure requirements for us is one of the major benefits we saw from potentially the committee having a discussion. Just highlighting existing disclosure requirements was there. And maybe what, Darrell, you picked up, and just to make it clear, is that you shouldn't view our recommendation around, I think, you know, the cryptocurrencies and saying we'll ask the committee to discuss as being as what we view as a solution, as an alternative sort of solution in a sense compared to standard setting. The first part of the paper leading up to question one is us assessing, based on all of the research and information we've obtained, whether we think it proves there's, you know, a big enough, you know, the problem definition piece in a sense is big enough to suggest it's worth investing, you know, the time and energy and everything else in standard setting at this stage. And that was where we said no. So what we're recommending in the context of the committee discussion is not like an alternative to that in a sense. It's saying we think, based on everything we had now, there's not enough to suggest, you know, it's worth investing in standard setting now. However, we still see some benefit, as you say, in providing some clarity about how you go about thinking about the existing requirements for these things.
And one of the big points, like Katrina said about disclosure, that's like a key part of how we might see the agenda decision looking like. We don't know what the committee would foresee, but for example, okay, it could be 3% or 85% today. Tomorrow, we know these things go up and down. Craig's done some tracking of that. It could be, go from 85% to 40% or from 3% to 20%. And, you know, one of the things we might want to highlight is the requirements in IS-10, the requirements in IS-1. And the other thing is the searches that have been performed by the staff here are limited by the terms that we've used. So if someone's a bunch of cryptocurrencies in other investments or marketable securities and not disclosed anything, then, you know, our population might be understated. So we just don't know.
Mary?
I started out thinking, yep, right way to go, and listening to some of the concerns, it's made me soften but not flip my recommendation. I think the Interpretation Committee is a valuable resource. It's not that it's just more hands so, you know, we can get more resources. I think it's people who know and think about the standards, but also are practicing the application of them in different ways. And so I think as a first step, taking the crypto issue to them and asking them to work through for these three different categories with, from what you've done here, mining being quite minor in terms of the accounting question, it is a good start. To Francoise's first observation of, I don't know what I'm signing up for if I tell them to do this, or the concern about is 38 the most useful accounting, I think it's asking them to take subject crypto, split it into the three buckets, see if they find a fourth bucket. I don't think they would based on the work you've done. Walk through what are some of the considerations for applying it, and then maybe get their first assessment of, do they think the accounting that they've identified through this process provides relevant information, and also what kind of priority do they attach to it in terms of addressing the issues. And that then gives us something to react to, respond to, that combines the technical with people working in practice. I thinking about this, I would tend, as I think the staff has here, to think more about holding as the pervasive issue.
Yeah.
I think the initial coin offerings are the ones that Hans, that are particularly attracting the interest of regulators, because it's taking money from people in return for it in what may be a regulated or an unregulated or isn't but should be regulated, transaction. And you said identify what the rights and obligations are. If those transactions vary significantly, the interpretation committee may not be able to say a lot in their analysis other than there's no uniform transaction structure, so you have to think about what the rights and obligations are. And if that's the case, I wouldn't, Claire, try and push them to go through the stuff you were enumerating about what are the disclosures, what are some of the other concerns, because we could do that as education for a lot of things, but that really seems to be the one where I'd expect the market regulators to take the lead. I think holding is the one that has the risk of being pervasive across a lot of companies, and is thinking through how would you walk through our standards, and then once you've done that, how useful do you think the accounting is to you, the interpretation committee, and based on that, what, if any, recommendations do you have for the board, knowing that we may kick it back to you or it may be something that we pick up. And then if what you're seeing on mining is that basically everybody's saying, well, you apply revenue recognition to those activities, I think I would want to do as little as possible rather than saying we could do more education, examples of disclosure, et cetera. Let's, as we do for other things, wait for practice to throw up the questions and respond to them rather than trying to think through, what all the questions may be. I think it's ICOs that are maybe more the problem child, but I think it's not a financial reporting problem as much as it is regulatory problem, and that the financial reporting questions are around holding. Mm-hmm. But I would still say let's go to the interpretation committee and ask them to do a first pass of how the standards apply, where they think the holes are, but the extra step of what is their view about whether the accounting is useful, particularly in respect of holding, and then see where that gets us.
Talk. Thank you. I agree with staff's recommendation. I think it's too early for us to tackle the standard setting activity. This is because we don't know yet what the encrypted currency transaction is all about. There are a variety of transactions. And how can we scope the scope for the standards? And even the regulators, as Mary mentioned, regulators hasn't yet find out what is the appropriate scope to regulate. So ASBJ has issued accounting standard only because FSA has provided some guidance of transaction for this specific type of transaction. So therefore, based on that regulation, they issued standard for those type of transactions. So therefore, Mary is right. Regulators should take a lead. We should not go ahead of regulators. It's an offside.
Martin?
And I also agree with what Tom has said, that It's a little bit concerning because, man, why don't we do what staff recommends and maybe bring it back before we decide on the remainder of this pipeline projects that we then give out? Is it then maybe in 1 year's time of urgency that we do it now? Because, man, we have decided now what we're doing from the pipeline projects. And we say that in 2019 or 20, we do enter equity method, pollutant pricing mechanism. And if we then in this discussion would again then say, okay, we're discussing this maybe with urgency, and now we're doing this with an interpretation committee focusing on disclosure and making this clear which standard it goes, I think is sufficient for the time. But to defer it until the next agenda consultation, I think is also a little bit. I feel not happy because many people discussing that. I was also with EFRAG, I think we'll do a project and others, and we are waiting, hopefully not too long, and maybe in 1 year time we have another discussion. Maybe then doing it that if he's setting priorities with other competing projects. Because if I would do something, I don't know, equity method or this, I don't know what I should decide now. We need a broader discussion then. I think it's always difficult to discuss this in isolation.
I agree with where I think Mary and Francoise are generally. I think that we can use the. I think we probably started off with quite a binary choice between the committee versus us doing something bigger. And I think maybe we should think about it as more of a combination. So we can use the committee's skills with their practice experience. They're very good at understanding how the scope paragraphs are read, etc., to give us some more information about, you know, if you just pick up the book today, where do you land? I think knowing how clear it is where you land in the first instance would be an interesting thing. We're very confident that it's clear, but let's see. And then as a secondary question, assuming we are clear where we land, do we think it's a good outcome or not? They can give us some views, and then it gives us another chance to look at it fresh, because mm-hmm. I do agree with Tom that sort of just pretending it's all okay is probably a bit of a risky strategy. Having said that, I suspect that we, even if we did want to change, there'll be some who won't want fair value through P&L because they'll be worried that if it's not an active and liquid market, that there'll be unrealised gains going into P&L and distributions, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there'll be some layers of complexity about scope even if we did want to make changes. But the committee gives us the benefit of another set of information, I think, to stop and say, OK, well, is it useful just to confirm this? Well, now we confirm what's required. Actually, are we happy? Now we see what that is, and are there any clues on what more, if anything, we should do?
Okay. Can we... Yes?
Can I ask a question just to clarify, and hopefully it'll be helpful for the vote? In terms of what we'll ask... Well, sorry, should I wait for the vote and then ask my... My clarified question is about, in terms of what we were suggesting in the paper to ask the committee to do, that would focus on holding and ICOs. I know, Mary, your kind of comments were, look, holding is clearly the main issue. I suppose maybe in asking the question, could we maybe find out if the committee's voting, do you just want us to ask the committee about the holding piece, or do you want to ask the committee about the holding and the ICO piece?
I'd say put the question as originally asked of staff.
Okay. Sorry.
Can we support staff's recommendation?
Is that modification?
Oh. So going to the committee first and then back to us?
And you're going
yes.
To
yes.
Okay. Or let's start the staff recommendation.
Okay, that brings us to the end of discussions for today.
Tomorrow.